The exceptions to the minimum wage. From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. In many parts of the U.S., it is still legal to pay people with disabilities less than the minimum wage. It's called a sub-minimum wage. And the Department of Labor said this week that it is planning a comprehensive review of the policy. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams has more.
Federal regulations permit companies to apply for special certificates that permit them to hire disabled workers and pay them an average of less than $4 an hour. But some states have banned the practice under pressure from those in the disability advocacy community who chafe at the unequal pay standards, says Kelly Nye-Langerman, director of the Institute on Disability at the University of New Hampshire.
We've seen the numbers of subminimum wage certificate holders shrink over the last 5, 10, 20 years, but there still are thousands of people with disabilities that are paid subminimum wage in the United States today.
The Department of Labor is calling for stakeholders to weigh in on the program, especially those within the disabled community. Kimberly Nockstedt is director of the Disability Economic Justice Collaborative at the Century Foundation.
What this is expected to actually mean is that the Department of Labor is going to use everything in their power to see if they need to actually continue issuing certificates.
Changes are likely to get pushback from those who say the subminimum wage is necessary to provide sustainable employment for people facing discrimination by traditional employers. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
There is still a narrow window for the world to prevent global temperatures from rising by more than 1.5 degrees Celsius, 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit, above pre-industrial levels. But to do that, annual investments in clean energy would need to more than double in the coming years. That's according to a report out this week from the International Energy Agency. Marketplace's Henry Epp has more.
Right now, the IEA estimates governments and companies around the world are investing about $1.8 trillion a year on clean energy. That's a lot more than just a few years ago, thanks mostly to the declining cost of solar, wind, and other renewables. As those sources have gotten cheaper, it's made more economic sense for companies to build them out. The private sector will likely provide a lot of the investment in clean energy, says David Victor, a professor of innovation and public policy at UC San Diego. But governments are important too, he says, to subsidize projects and push the energy sector to clean up.
One of the most important things that government can do is set clear rules and expectations. And the places where private investment has flowed most liberally have been exactly in those areas.
But for private clean energy investments to really succeed, Victor says, government policies need to stay consistent, and more countries will need to adopt them. I'm Henry Epp for Marketplace.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.
With little progress in Washington, a shutdown is looking more and more inevitable. That would have a direct impact on federal workers. They won't be paid, and some will have to go to work anyway. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer joins us to talk about it. Morning, Nancy.
Good morning.
So we are talking about hundreds of thousands of workers spread out all across the country. What would a shutdown look like for them?
Well, some federal employees would be furloughed during a shutdown without pay. Others would be considered essential. They'd have to work, but they wouldn't get a paycheck either. According to the White House, more than 1 million active duty troops would have to stay on the job without pay during a shutdown. So would some civilians on military bases like Stephen Booth. He's a civilian police officer on an Air Force base in Kansas. And he told me he makes less than $50,000 a year. He has six kids. Plus, he and his wife are already dealing with the aftermath of the pandemic and the loss of pandemic benefits like the expanded child tax credit.
So most of our savings got depleted during COVID due to dealing with the kids being home more from school, especially when the schools got shut down.
Wow. So no savings and no paycheck. How would he deal with that?
Booth already has credit card debt, but he says he'd have to pile up even more debt charging things like food. He also has to pay for things like utilities and his mortgage, though.
Do federal workers get any kind of forbearance on loans or debt during a shutdown? Can they basically just say, listen, I'm not getting paid. Can I please hold off on paying my bills?
Well, that's what another federal employee I talked to, Jessica LaPointe, is planning to do. She works at the Social Security Administration's office in Madison, Wisconsin. She's a single mom, and she also lives paycheck to paycheck. She was told she could get a letter from the office to send to her creditors explaining the situation. She says she is trying to somehow prepare for the loss of her paycheck, but she's already done a lot of belt tightening because of inflation, and there's just not a lot of belt left to tighten.
There's not much more I can do with my budget, so I will have to rely on family and friends. Maybe my creditors will just allow me to go a few months without paying the bills. That's a big maybe.
Now, LaPointe says her three-year-old daughter's daycare center doesn't take credit cards. If she can't pay, she'll have to pull her daughter out of daycare. If that happens, she could lose her spot, and childcare is very hard to find. And I should say both LaPointe and Booth spoke in their capacity as leaders of their local union chapters. They belong to the American Federation of Government Employees.
All right. Nancy, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
At one point in the pandemic, Americans had squirreled away $2.1 trillion in extra savings that may be pretty much gone now. Where did it all go? Catch that story and more on the half hour of Marketplace with my colleague Kai Rizdahl. Later today on many public radio stations and streaming from Marketplace.org. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.